A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Logos. A graphic of a swan reflects on a dark surface. It raises its wings and ripples appear. Shiv Hans Pictures. Nested metal rings spin into a twisting O. Harpo Films. Text slides out from either side of a slash mark. Yoruba Saxon. Text appears. Netflix presents. A Shiv Hans Pictures production. A Harpo Films Yoruba Saxon production. Text appears, phrase by phrase. In the town of Pine Mills, for generations, people have claimed to see a tall, shadowy figure emerging from a lake with a fire on his chest and hope in his eyes. The text vanishes. A title resolves in rippling blue letters, The Waterman. It disappears. From high above, a kid rides an electric scooter along a cemetery road. Credits appear. David Oyelowo. Rosario Dawson. Lonnie Chavez. The kid resolves into a young tween boy with medium brown skin and a gap between his front teeth. He stops and blinks his dark eyes. Amaya Miller, Alfred Molina, and Maria Bello. He peers around a hedge toward a small gathering of light-skinned mourners standing by a coffin. At home, he sits at a desk wearing a headlamp. A sketchy graphic novel page rests in front of him.
Detective Knox approached the cemetery like he had done so many times before. But this crime scene would soon prove to be very different. Because the dead body was none other than Detective Knox himself. I'm a ghost.
The illustrations move. The boy looks up, wearing a faint smile.
Gunner!
The boy, Gunner, slides beneath his bed.
Hey!
A slim woman with light brown skin enters. She wears a colorful caftan and matching head wrap.
Where could my dear, sweet son be?
Gunner's headlamp shines on her foot.
Hmm.
He widens his eyes and takes it off.
Could have sworn he was in here.
Gunner's mom, Mary, folds her arms and stares out a window.
I really need to talk to him.
Gunner sneaks up behind her. She grabs him.
Did you think you got me?
No, I didn't.
It feels like you think you got me.
I get it, Mom.
A man with cropped black hair, dark brown skin, and a goatee drives along a road lined with lush greenery. He turns up his sound system. At home, Mary tickles Gunner.
Mom!
What were you thinking?
One, two, one, two.
I feel like you're making weird noises. Are you laughing? This is very serious.
The goateed man passes an older white couple sharing a snack. He drives along a small town main street. An elderly white woman sitting in a wheelchair glares as he drives past. The goateed man steers his red pickup around a right turn and heads towards a winding forest road. He parks. Inside, a katana hangs mounted on a wall above family photos of a man in military uniform and with Mary and Gunner. The man, Gunner's father, Amos, enters.
Hi.
Perfect timing.
Hi, Gunner.
Okay, share with your dad. Do you want to share?
You should be taking it easy, babe.
Oh, I feel good. I feel better today.
You look better.
Thank you.
Gunner reads Sherlock Holmes.
I have never seen anything like it. A Chinese restaurant that only plays top 100 country hits.
My favorite.
Don't even joke about that.
What?
Country music is a line in the sand of this marriage.
Oh!
I am serious. This town is weird. I think that's why we got such a good deal on the house. That and this whole antler lighting situation.
A chandelier made of antlers hangs over the dining table.
Stop it. It's just different here than what we're used to.
Yeah, real different.
Right?
Gunner, no books at the table, love.
Gunner.
Yeah.
No books at the table, bud.
Gunner's been getting to know the town. He's been all over on his scooter. He made a friend, Mrs. Spakemeyer, at the bookstore. Did you go by there again today?
Yeah. Then I went to a funeral.
A funeral?
Yeah.
Mary and Amos exchange a look.
Whose funeral?
Gunner shrugs.
You shouldn't be going to a stranger's funeral, Gunner. That's private. Why would you do that?
It was just for research.
Amos scowls. Later, Gunner sits by his open bedroom door.
You made him feel weird.
It is weird. He knows you're sick and he's researching funerals?
It's for his graphic novel.
Mary stalks away from Amos. Amos turns and locks eyes with Gunner. Gunner shuts his door. Gunner draws. An illustration moves its mouth.
Who did this to me?
Gunner? Can I come in?
Gunner nods. He takes off his headlamp as Mary switches on a light. She sets aside his drawing paper and inks and joins him on his bed.
I know this move's been hard for you. It's been hard for your dad, too.
He's just always mad at me. I really preferred it when he was gone.
Don't say that, Gunner.
I'm sorry, Mom, but it's true.
He loves you so much. And since he's been back from Japan, he's just stressed about me.
Where do we go when we die?
That's easy. Cheesecake Factory.
Mom.
Okay, real talk. No one knows for sure. But I believe there's a special place our souls go. A place we won't understand until we're already there. You know?
Like heaven? Does everyone go there?
I don't know. The one thing we do know is that we have this time now, and we have to spend it loving each other every day.
Gunner offers a faint smile. His eyes glisten. Mary moves up next to him and wraps him in a hug.
Come here. I am holding my son. The night is here, but sleep won't come. The sun has started to fall. The moon shines on his crib so small. Gently he drifts away.
Amos stands outside the open bedroom door.
Till the morning comes. Brand new day, sleep deeply, baby.
Amos withdraws.
Sleep soundly now.
Sunlight brightens the interior of the house. Amos enters Gunner's room.
Hey, Gunner. Get up. Let's go toss the ball around before I head to work.
What time is it?
8:30.
Dad, it's summer vacation.
Sun's been up for hours. Come on, come on. Show your old man what you got.
Oh, no.
Daddy, ruin them!
Gunner snatches an ink-stained page from the floor. Amos steps back with his hands outstretched. Gunner pushes past him. Amos shoots a look at the watching Mary. In semi-darkness, Gunner draws, wearing his headlamp. He hurries toward a bathroom.
Mom? Mom? I'm just nauseous.
She shuts the door in his face.
Dad! Mom's sick again.
Amos sets several items on a coffee table and hurries to the bathroom.
Stay out here. It's okay. It's me.
Gunnar ambles towards the coffee table. He glances over his shoulder, then reaches for a paper bag. Gunnar pulls out a prescription bottle labeled Mary Boone Morphine Sulfate, prescribed by Dr. Deborah Cross. Gunnar frowns. In the daytime, he rides his scooter along a rough road. He passes a vegetable patch on his left and trees on both sides. In town, Gunnar approaches the bookstore. A sign over the front window reads, Once Upon a Time, New and Used. Inside, a light-skinned middle-aged woman with dark straight hair shelves books.
Hi, Mrs. Beekmeyer.
Hi, Gunnar. I read to chapter 12 last night. Holmes and Watson had just entered the abandoned building. Where'd you leave off?
Gunnar stacks books on a counter.
You finished these already?
Can I borrow some different books? I promise I'll keep them in good condition.
What about your research for Detective Knox?
I'm doing new research. I'm gonna need every book you have on leukemia.
Mrs. Beekmeyer stares, open-mouthed. Gunnar sits on his bed, surrounded by books on leukemia biological therapy. He writes in a notebook, then erases something from a list that includes the words Roxanol and Ativan.
You can't live with the world on your shoulders.
A nurse with light brown skin helps Amos lower Mary into her bed. A person in a white coat wields an IV pole. Gunnar watches from a doorway as people bustle around the dazed Mary.
Take my hand and you'll see love will find us.
Mary's head lolls. She lifts her bleary eyes to meet Gunnar's. He forces a smile. Outside, Gunnar jogs toward the nurse as she gets into her car.
Excuse me.
You've been lost.
Excuse me. Hi, the medicine you're giving my mom, I don't really think that is the right one.
Well, it's medicine to take all her pain away.
I know, but I think that you should give her methotrexate or doxorubicin hydrochloride.
I'm sorry. It's really not my call.
Gunnar watches with glossy eyes as the nurse drives away. He rides his scooter along a bridge spanning a small river. A truck drives past him, hauling a load of timber. Gunnar rides past lush greenery. A huge abandoned structure on his right sports a graffiti portrait of a shadowy mustached figure with the words, The Waterman. Gunnar stops and stares. Inside the abandoned structure, a teenage girl with light skin and faded blue hair addresses a group of kids.
You better not have come empty-handed. You know the deal. I always thought the Waterman was just a bunch of BS. Something grown-ups told kids to keep him from sneaking off into the woods. But then I met him face to face. And I have the scar to prove it.
Gunnar watches from outside a doorway.
Some of what you've heard is true. Like how he lives out in the woods, by a lake called Wild Horse. That the forest has turned weird because of his powers. That he's gone crazy. But no one knows where to find him. No one except me. If you want to hear the rest of the story, you gotta pay.
The blue-haired girl picks up an empty paint bucket. Kids put money inside as she walks past. Gunnar stays outside the doorway, unnoticed. At home, Gunnar sits at his desk and draws. He colors in a sketch of the girl, swiping a blue-colored pencil along her hair. In the kitchen, smoke billows from a pan on the stove. Amos yanks it off the burner.
Damn it.
Something's burning.
Thank you.
Later, Gunnar eats cereal.
September ended fires
Gunnar opens a thick book to a fold-out diagram of a human body. He opens it, revealing intestines and other organs. Gunnar turns to a bookmarked section. He sets the bookmark aside and scans handwritten notes on the left-hand page, written in cursive with red ink. Immortality or resurrection. Undying. Organ function. Skin discoloration. Does he need to eat? Sleep? Unnaturally long life. Gunnar tightens his brow. On the facing page, the red ink underlines the typewritten phrase, increased cellular regeneration. Below, more handwriting reads, the Waterman? Gunnar looks up.
Waterman.
Gunnar flips to the book's first page, which bears the imprint of Bussy and Sons funeral directors, Pine Mills. In the daytime, Gunnar ascends a set of steps to a front porch. He pulls the thick book, The Art and Science of Human Anatomy, from his backpack. A tall, strapping figure approaches a frosted glass window in the front door.
You're trying to sell me something? The answer's no.
It's about the Waterman.
The figure, an older man with light skin, dark hair, and a gray beard, opens the door partway. He peers through a screen door.
Is this yours?
I got rid of that years ago.
There's a note in here. It's about the Waterman.
Is this a prank? Where are your friends, huh? Where are they hiding? Where are your buddies with the cameras?
Mr. Bussy, right?
Yeah, well, I warned you, kids. You pulled another prank, I'd call the police.
It's not a prank. I just want to know if the Waterman is real.
Of course he's real.
I just moved here, and I wanted to hear from someone who actually knew what they were talking about. Really thought that you could help me.
Mr. Bussy looks Gunnar up and down through the screen door.
What's your name?
Gunnar Boone.
Gunnar Boone? You swear this isn't a prank?
It crossed my heart.
Bussy straightens, keeping his eyes on Gunnar. He steps inside, leaving the front door open. Gunnar looks over his shoulder, then reaches for the handle of the screen door. Inside, Gunnar gazes at taxidermied animals dotting Bussy's dim, elegant home. Gunnar eyes a taxidermied rabbit perched on a glass case. Gunnar looks left down a hallway. A skeleton hangs mounted in another room.
In here.
Bussy heads for the room with the skeleton, carrying an urn-shaped jar.
You cold?
No.
You sure? It's always freezing in this darn house. Yeah, take a seat.
Gunnar sits on a cushioned window seat. Bussy pulls over an old office chair to face him.
So, why do you care so much about the Waterman?
The note I saw in this book says that he's immortal. I need to know more about it.
Huh. Yeah, well, death is a strange thing, Gunnar Boone. One instant you're alive, rejuvenating cells, forming memories, interacting with the world around you. And then in the blink of an eye, your heart stops beating. Your organs, your blood, it all ceases and begins to decay. Cookie?
Gunnar takes a cookie from the jar.
Now, in my line of work, we spend a lot of time with the dead. I know everyone who's died in the whole county. Yeah, death is pretty much a cut-and-dried business, Gunnar. It's permanent. Except when it comes to the Waterman.
Bussy points to a black-and-white photo in a weathered album.
His real name was Edward Shaw. He was a young man when he and his wife moved to Wild Horse. Wild Horse started out as a mining town. But the only rock in those mountains were igneous rock, obsidian, worth less than iron.
A photo morphs into animation.
One day, Edward found a rock vein no one had ever seen before.
Edward Shaw picks up a yellow rock.
Its glow was mesmerizing. But his discovery was soon forgotten. Because that very night, tragedy struck the town of Wild Horse. Wild Horse Dam broke. The flood came suddenly. No warning. No chance to escape. He and his wife, Sarah, were swallowed up.
Edward's shirt pocket glows yellow. He reaches for Sarah in the swirling floodwater.
Some of the bodies floated downstream as far as Pine Mills. My father was just a boy then, about your age. He saw the carnage. Saw it himself. And his father, my grandfather, he had to examine the bodies. And he declared them all deceased. That was until Edward Shaw miraculously woke up.
In Bussy's office.
From that day on, he was known as the Waterman. And even though Wild Horse had been washed away, he moved back there. Claimed he could save his wife. If only he could find her body.
Gunnar flips an album page. A shadowy photo of the hooded mustache Edward morphs into animation, resembling white chalk on black paper.
He hung black stones all around the forest to mark where he'd searched. Most people thought he was crazy, except for a few, my father included, who swore they saw something in those woods.
He waves a stone over a dead deer.
Dead animals coming back to life. They said it was proof that the Waterman's power is real.
The deer leaps away.
Legend has it that he's still living up by the lake, searching the waters and the woods for his wife's body, so he could bring her back from the dead. Even if all that was left of her were her bones.
In Bussy's office, Gunnar stares ahead.
How did he get his power?
Some say blood magic. And my father swore it had something to do with that rock vein the Waterman found deep in the belly of the mine. A rock that was of no value to the living, but invaluable to their dead. When my father passed away, God rest his soul, I tried to go up there to the lake, find the stone, see if it was true.
Bussy opens a map of East Cascade County.
But that forest is alive, and I got spooked, being in those woods all alone. I believed if I found him, I'd get to see my father again.
Gunnar picks up the map. A scene flashes of the girl with blue hair.
But no one knows where to find him. No one except me.
Do you have a copy of this that I could borrow?
That is a copy. Keep it. It's yours.
At night, Gunnar sits on his bed under a sheet. He looks from the map to a laptop screen of a satellite image. Gunnar zooms in on the image. A cove on a shoreline matches the same landmark on the map, near Wild Horse. Gunnar presses his lips together. He turns off the screen. In a blue-tinted scene, a wooden chair drifts underwater. Light ripples over it from above. A pocket watch hangs suspended. Bodies drift in the dark water. A red-haired woman in a white nightgown floats motionless. Gunnar bursts out of his room. Sweat shines on his face. He looks into his parents' bedroom, where Amos sleeps alone.
Mom?
A bathroom mirror reflects Mary's bald head as she drops her robe. She pulls her robe back on.
I had a baby! Oh, my man! Amos!
What is it? Gunnar? What happened? Gunnar, what happened?
Mary wears a cap.
He saw me without my... I think I just scared him.
Stop. You're upsetting your mom. Gunnar, I said stop!
Gunnar freezes. He crawls backward into Mary's arms.
Amos. You're okay. I'm sorry.
Gunnar stares up fearfully at his father.
You're okay.
In the morning, Gunnar opens an ET lunchbox. He stuffs cash into a round tin and tucks the tin into his backpack. Gunnar steps into the hallway, gripping the katana. Gunnar rides his scooter along a country road, past a body of water. He wears jeans and a hoodie, and his backpack with a katana strapped to it. Inside the abandoned structure, a red tent sits among several towering trees and evenly spaced rectangular stones. Graffiti marks the walls. Gunnar steps in and sets down his scooter. He looks up at the graffiti as he takes off his helmet. The blue-haired girl stands in an open doorway, facing him. She wears a flannel shirt with tattered jean shorts layered over purple tights.
Is that a sword?
Yes.
She steps toward him.
Where'd you get it?
I have a question about the waterman.
Got any money?
Yes.
What's your name?
Gunnar.
Hi, Gunnar.
She sticks out her hand.
I'm Joe.
Gunnar shakes it.
Follow me.
They walk toward the red tent.
So, do you live here?
For now, till I save up enough money to get my own place. I got a few stories that cost more than a dollar, but I'm telling you, they're worth it.
Okay, but I'm still gonna need money to buy supplies.
Supplies for what?
I'm going to find the waterman.
Joe nods.
Come into my office.
Gunnar ducks into the tent. He and Joe sit facing each other, bathed in the tent's red glow.
Ever been alone in those woods, kid?
No.
Let's say you survive the woods. Make it all the way past the river, the cliffs, the coyotes. You'll find yourself face to face with the devil himself.
Joe lifts her hair, revealing a scar beneath her left ear.
Not many of us around to tell that side of the story. And no more?
Joe holds out her open palm. Gunnar gives her some money. She glances at it, then beckons with her other hand. Gunnar hesitates. He hands her some more. She grips it and smiles.
Tell me everything you know about the waterman.
I can do you one better. Give me all your money, and I'll take it in myself.
But what about supplies?
Okay, sure, we'll buy supplies. Then give me what's left over. But I should warn you, those woods will scare the crap out of you, dude. I keep the money, even if you back out.
Joe holds out her pinky.
Do we have a deal?
Gunnar considers. At home, Amos approaches Gunnar's closed door with glistening eyes. He raises his fist, then pauses. Amos rubs his mouth. He drops his hand and walks away down the hall. In the kitchen, Amos leans against the counter, holding a piece of bread. He looks into the next room and straightens. Amos eyes a chair by a fireplace beneath the empty katana brackets. He looks around Gunnar's empty room. In the next room, Mary sleeps in bed. Amos's eyes fall on a folded note on the nightstand. The outside reads, "Mom." Amos opens the note and reads. He glances at Mary, then stares at the note. Meanwhile, Joe and Gunnar approach Chuck's general store in Pine Mills. Inside, Chuck, an older white guy with long graying hair, sits at a checkout counter. He stares up at a nearby TV. Joe and Gunnar step inside.
I made a list of everything that we need. Well, actually, it's everything
that I need because I didn't know that you were gonna come.
What the hell? I only need half this stuff.
Gunnar grabs a basket and glances at Chuck.
Morning.
Morning.
Gunnar drops items into the basket. Joe eyeballs Chuck. She grabs some candy and stuffs it into her pocket.
Joe. What? If you snitch, I kill you. Come on.
Gunnar sets the basket on the checkout counter.
Hello? We're ready.
Chuck takes canned items from the basket.
This is a lot of peaches.
We got moolah.
Is that a weapon?
Oh.
Kids are up early on summer vacation. Do your parents know you're here?
Listen, dude, why don't you just, like, mind your own business?
How about I call the police and make it their business?
It's an antique samurai sword.
Gunnar spots a Vietnam vet cap.
My dad brought it back from Japan. He was stationed there in the Navy. I just like to carry it around. And we're gonna need all this food because we're having a picnic. Sir.
Amos jogs into the Cascades County Sheriff's Office. Two white officers work behind the front desk, a man, Williams, and a blonde woman, Goodwin.
I'm here to report a missing child. My son, he's missing.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. We just need to file a report.
Excuse me, sir. How long has your son been missing?
I don't know.
Please have a seat.
In a back room, Goodwin sits at a table with Amos. William stands nearby.
What is your name, sir?
Amos Boone.
And your son's name, Mr. Boone?
Gunner.
Any reason you think he might run away?
His mom is real sick. And it's been hard on him, on all of us. I raised my voice at him last night. He left this note.
Goodwin opens the note.
I know how to make you better. Do you know what he meant by that?
No, I don't.
In the sun-dappled forest, Joe leads Gunnar across a small footbridge. Beneath it runs a wide, shallow river. They duck beneath tree branches along the riverbank. Sunlight glows between the trunks of tall, lush trees. They pass a nest with several dark baby birds, opening their gaping yellow beaks. Thick moss covers hanging branches. A glossy millipede moves along wet wood. Joe and Gunnar walk down a slope near a fallen log. They traverse a scrubby clearing with vivid yellow undergrowth, moving toward a thick swath of trees. Beyond the dense forest ahead, smoke billows from the top of a ridge. Jo wears earphones as she leads Gunnar through a sunny patch of vegetation. Gunnar looks around with wide eyes. Above, sunlight shines among mossy, spreading branches. Gunnar turns on the spot, taking it all in. He notices Jo getting further away and scrambles after her. They sit on the bank of the river by a rocky shallow.
I'm hungry. My stomach hurts.
Gunnar stares at a can of peaches.
You didn't happen to bring a can opener or anything, did you?
Jo purses her lips. She looks down and smirks. Gunnar frowns. The can of peaches rests in the fork of a tree stump. Jo raises the katana overhead.
Jo, if you damage that sword, my dad is going to kill me.
Stop being such a wuss.
I'm serious, Jo.
She swings. Peach juice splatters all over her.
Ew, gross!
Shut up.
It's not funny.
At night, Amos's red pickup speeds towards the house. He jogs toward the house. Amos enters Gunnar's room. He turns on a lamp and looks around the vacant space. Amos moves to Gunnar's desk, where the ruined page of illustrations rests next to others. He picks up a bookmark bearing the bookstore's name, Once Upon a Time.
Gunnar?
Mary lies propped up in her bed.
Hey, babe. You okay?
Just tired. Where's Gunnar?
Oh, he's playing. Outside.
Mary pats the bed. Amos moves closer.
I think you really scared him last night.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm not the one you need to say it to.
Yes, we're right.
Amos leaves the bedroom. Outside, two kids ride bikes.
Hey! You seen a kid riding around on an electric scooter? His name's Gunnar Boone.
No, why?
He's my son. He hasn't come home.
Maybe the waterman got him.
Shut up, idiot.
The kids ride off.
Who's the waterman?
Just some stupid ghost story.
By a large rocky overhang, Gunnar and Joe sit by a fire.
So, your dad just lets you take his old samurai sword? You ran away.
Did not. I left a note.
You left a note. Dude, your runaway skills suck. Does he hit you?
No.
Then what?
I'm never good enough for him. He's probably happy I'm gone anyway. There's less stuff on his plate. What about your parents? Are they gonna come after you?
Jo rolls her eyes. She grins and shakes her head.
I don't need anyone looking out for me. I can take care of myself.
Is that a coyote?
Could be. Or the howling wild horses. They usually travel in packs.
The howling wild horses?
We should take turns keeping watch. You see anything move, don't think. Swing that sword. You take first watch.
Jo lies on the ground and curls up on her side. Gunnar glances over his shoulder toward the dark forest beyond. He pulls the curved sword from its sheath and gazes at the gleaming metal blade. He looks out toward the noise with wide eyes. At home, Amos sits next to Mary on the bed.
Will you hold me for a bit?
Yeah, of course.
He puts his arm around her. She leans against him.
Been so out of it today, I didn't even see Gunnar.
Amos looks toward a framed photo of himself holding his infant son.
I should go talk to him.
No, you should rest, babe. He's asleep. He's been out all day again.
Something's on your mind. What is it?
Just seems like he doesn't want to be around me.
promise you, he needs you right now. You just need to see him. Really see him.
By the dying fire, Gunnar wears his headlamp. He sketches a portrait of the hooded, mustached waterman. On the other side of the fire, the sleeping Jo draws one knee closer to her chest. Gunnar removes a blanket from around his shoulders. He moves toward Jo and drapes it over her. Gunnar turns. In the distance, something glimmers in the pitch-dark forest. Tensed, Gunnar steps toward the woods. He stoops to pick up the sword. Something flits past. Gunnar grips the sword with both hands. He stares out into the gloom with his headlamp shining. The distant something glints and blinks in the dark, beyond a patch of ferns illuminated by Gunnar's headlamp.
Hello?
Gunnar moves forward. His rapid breaths fog in the air. Something passes behind him. He whips around.
Mr. Waterman?
A figure glides by behind Gunnar. He turns. His eyes dart back and forth. Gunnar turns back toward the glimmering object in the distance. He slowly steps forward, clutching the sword tightly. Before him dangles a chunk of gleaming black obsidian, tied up with string. Gunnar turns it with his fingers. He yanks it down. In the daytime, Amos and Sheriff Goodwin face a man outside a hardware store.
So he's been missing for 2 days. Gentleman's son here. Do you see anything at all?
Amos and Goodwin leave a restaurant. Inside, a woman puts up a missing poster of Gunnar. At the bookstore, Mrs. Bakemeyer plays piano as a customer browses. Amos steps in.
Let me know if I can help you find anything.
I'm Amos. I think you know my son Gunnar.
I've never met a child so smart. What an imagination.
I've been helping him with his research for Detective Knox.
He didn't come home last night. Did he come in today or yesterday?
No. No, he didn't.
You have a pen and paper?
Sure.
Here are both my numbers, home and cell. Please let me know if you hear from him.
I absolutely will.
And, you mind hanging these up?
Of course.
Thank you.
Mrs. Bakemeyer stares at one of the missing posters. In the woods, Joel leans against a tree. She unzips Gunnar's backpack. Joe opens the round tin. Several crumpled bills rest inside, including a five and several ones. Joe gazes off thoughtfully. She looks over her shoulder. Some distance away, Gunnar stands facing a tree. Gunnar turns away from the tree. Jo puts the tin back. She sets down the backpack as Gunnar approaches and pulls out her stolen candy.
Want some candy?
No.
He puts on his backpack.
What was that look for?
Nothing.
Look, dude, if you got a problem with me, say it.
It's
Stealing's wrong.
Ah, come on. You've never stolen anything in your life?
Never.
Never, ever.
Never.
Wow. Your mommy must be so proud of you.
Don't talk about my mom.
I won't. If you try one of these delicious pieces of stolen candy.
She taps him on the nose. He bats the candy out of her hand. Joe smirks and retrieves it. She throws Gunnar to the ground.
Stop it!
Make me! Mommy's not here to save you!
Get off of me!
Do you hear that?
Overhead, flocks of birds take flight. Joe and Gunnar stand and stare upward.
Is it the waterman?
They both look toward the noise. The ground trembles. A shockwave ripples toward them through the undergrowth.
Run!
A pack of horses gallops toward them. Joe and Gunnar sprint along the path ahead. The horses draw closer. Joe tackles Gunnar. They tumble off the path to their left. The horses continue past them. The kids share a look. Amos and Deputy Williams enter Chuck's general store.
Hey, Jay.
Chuck, could you do us a favor and hang one of these by the register, please?
Sure. Sure thing.
Thank you.
Are you in the Navy?
Yeah. How'd you know?
At the sheriff's station.
It was a day ago. Early morning. His son and another kid. A girl. And your son, he had your sword.
Can you describe the girl?
Yeah. Crazy hair. Blue. She had a big scar down her neck. Looked kind of fresh.
Are you serious?
Joel holds up her phone.
Not even one bar. Maybe we should go back. Retrace our steps.
Let me see your phone.
There's no service.
Gunnar unfolds his map. He uses a compass app on Joe's phone.
If we go northwest, we'll eventually find the river that will lead us to Wild Horse.
Gunnar continues ahead. Joe follows.
Look.
They approach a stand of towering trees. Gunnar touches another hanging chunk of obsidian. White flakes drift down amid the sun-dappled greenery.
Joe, look. Snow.
No way. It's July. Never snows in July.
Cool!
Gunnar beams. Joe looks up with a scowl.
This is a sign, right? It's not, we're getting close.
Maybe. I don't know. We should set up camp soon.
Joe steps away. Gunnar remains in place, grinning up at the drifting flakes. He holds out his hands and turns on the spot, wearing a wide grin.
Gunnar!
Gunnar scurries after Joe. At home, Mary takes a tentative step out of her bedroom. Her brow creases.
Gunnar?
She moves toward a phone. Her baggy clothes hang loosely from her frame.
Hello?
Hi, Miss Bigmeyer. How are you? Not yet. Did he come by the bookstore again today? No, wait, I'm sorry.
Mary sits.
What did my husband say?
In the forest, Joe and Gunnar approach a massive fallen tree. Joe ducks beneath a shelter created by its ripped-up roots. Gunnar doffs his backpack and sits beside her.
A natural for...
She takes an elastic from her wrist and gathers her hair back in a ponytail.
How do you know to go northwest?
My dad told me how to read a map.
Gunnar's gaze drifts toward the scar beneath Joe's left ear.
That must have really hurt.
She looks at him, then covers it with her hand.
Okay. Time to get the firewood.
Gunnar shifts his weight. Joe gets up and leaves the shelter. Gunnar quickly dons his headlamp and switches on the light. He pulls his hoodie tightly around himself. Later, he works on a drawing as Joe eats a snack.
You take classes or something?
No, I just draw. A lot.
Not bad. Pretty dope, actually. Is it like a comic book or something?
No, it's a graphic novel about a detective who's investigating his own murder.
Cool. So how does it end?
I don't know yet.
You don't know? It's your story. How do you not know the ending?
You can't know the ending until you get there.
A bug drops onto Joe's shoulder. Gunnar grabs the bug.
Ew!
Joe swats it out of his hand.
You are so scared.
It's not funny, dude.
Yes, it is, dude.
Joe glowers. She scoots away from Gunnar.
What are you doing?
My side. Don't cross it.
You take yourself too seriously.
Don't cross the line!
Fine.
Joe sits hunched and sulking in the darkness. Gunnar stays by the fire and turns back to his drawing.
Mary?
Amos returns home. Mary sits at a table covered in books with her back to Amos.
Got your message.
I spoke with the sheriff. And she told me everything.
Mary looks at Amos.
He sent me a text.
Well, Gunnar did? When? What did it say?
He sent it last night. My phone was off. Some strange number.
What did it say?
I'm fine, Mom. I'm doing this for you.
She covers her face with her hands.
I've been trying to get through the number for hours. It just goes to a generic voicemail.
Mary clutches a teddy bear lying on the table. Her brow tightens.
You lied to me.
Amos straightens. He averts his glistening eyes.
But I lied to Gunnar. I didn't think he could handle the truth. And you thought the same of me.
I'm sorry I lied to you.
I didn't want you to get more sick. I don't care what it takes, we're gonna find him, okay? Okay.
Mary fights back tears. She grabs her phone. Under the shelter, Joe and Gunnar lie fast asleep. One of the big bugs, a fat, segmented insect like a cockroach, skitters up Gunnar's leg. He wakes.
Ew!
Joe stirs. Gunnar reaches back, knocking a cascade of bugs onto him. Bucketfuls of huge, glistening bugs drop onto Joe and Gunnar. They flail and swat at the creatures. A wave of bugs pours from the shelter, sending Joe and Gunnar sliding downhill. They both tear off their outer layers and flee.
Oh, that was disgusting! Wait! My backpack! I'm not going back there!
Gunnar slings the katana over his back, then follows Joe away from the shelter. In daylight, smoke rises from smoldering evergreens. Joe sits hugging her knees and trembling.
You okay?
Gunnar sits beside her.
Find anything?
Only mushrooms. But they might be poisonous.
Joe stares down and shivers. Gunnar eyes her. He wraps his arms around her and rubs her shoulder. Joe lifts her wide, pale eyes. Her chin quivers.
There's some weird stuff going on.
It's a sign. They're getting close. Don't you think?
We lost all our stuff. I'm starving.
If we don't find them by tonight, we'll go home. I promise.
Joe gives a faint nod.
Okay.
At the house.
Hello.
Hey, Amos. Sheriff Goodwin here.
Hey.
Hey, you get my message about Gunnar's text?
Yes, I did, and we are looking into that number. I just want to let you know I think I found Gunnar's electric scooter in an old mill next to the forest. Amos, listen. There's a wildfire growing in that forest.
Oh, my God. Is it near where you found the scooter?
I don't have that information yet, but I have escaping animals and about 30 homes that I need to help evacuate. I should already be on my way, so...
Okay. What about Gunnar? What if he's out there?
I really need to help with these evacuations, but I'm going to have my deputy step in.
Okay, so give me one of these other deputies to talk to or something.
I promise you, we are doing everything that we possibly can.
Okay, yeah, no, let me talk to her.
Thank you, Sheriff, thank you.
Yeah.
Mary watches TV.
The Wild Horse Forest Fire is growing by the second after strong winds blew embers from an electrical fire toward Pine Mills and the surrounding towns. Residents in the area should check with their local fire or police station.
Where are you going?
If he's in that forest, I'm gonna find him.
What? How?
We gotta try.
Amos.
We gotta try, babe.
Amos buttons up a denim jacket. As it unfolds. Outside, Amos heads toward his pickup, with a backpack slung over his shoulder.
Excuse me.
Bussy approaches.
Excuse me. Are you Gunnar's father? I've seen posters around town.
You have any info?
Yeah, I think I know where he went.
Where?
Wild Horse.
What's in Wild Horse?
It's where the waterman lives, by the lake.
What, the ghost story? Why would my son care about that?
It's not a ghost story. Your son seemed very interested in how the waterman cheated death. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have given him the map.
I appreciate your help. I gotta go find my son.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a waterfall, Horsetail Falls. If you can make it up the ridge, maybe you can cut into the lake.
Thank you.
In the distance, a massive plume of gray smoke rises over the treetops. Amos drives.
Air quality warnings have been issued due to the falling ash covering much of the city. More and more people in the surrounding counties are encouraged to pack essentials and valuables.
Several sheriff's vehicles and barricades block the road ahead. A deputy waves Amos to a stop. Amos steers ahead with shining eyes and a creased brow. Deputy waves frantically. Amos weaves between a vehicle and a barricade and continues ahead. Two deputies rush to their vehicles. Amos glances over his shoulder. In the forest, a fallen log spans a briskly flowing stretch of river. Gunner leads Joe along the riverbank with a katana slung across his back. He ducks and moves through a gap beneath the log. Joe follows him. Gunner stares out at the far side of the river.
Uh-uh. No way. I'm not crossing that.
Well, I am.
Gunner moves toward the log. Joe stays put and folds her arms. Gunner clambers up onto the huge moss-covered log. He stands and holds out his arms. Gunner takes a few tiny steps forward. He falters, but keeps his balance.
Dude, are you serious?
Gunner looks over at Joe. She scowls and shakes her head. Gunner continues across the log, one minuscule step at a time. The river churns beneath him. He pauses partway across.
See? Not so bad.
Gunner slips. The katana strap snags on a broken branch.
Gunner! Holy crap!
No, I can't swim!
Hold on, I'm coming!
I can't swim!
Joe climbs onto the log. She crawls toward Gunner.
I can't swim!
Gunner!
Please, I can't hold on!
Gunner, don't let go!
Gunner grips the log. His hand slips.
Joe, help me! Give me your hand!
They grab each other's wrists.
Come on, Gunner, we can do it! Come on! Give me your leg!
I can't hold on!
Gunner kicks up his leg. Joe grabs it and hauls him up onto the log. They both sit straddling the log. Gunner pulls off the katana.
Thank you. Let's keep going. We're halfway across.
Joe closes her eyes. She grudgingly follows him. Amos's pickup crosses a bridge near a waterfall. He puts on his backpack and runs up a green slope toward the tall, narrow waterfall. Sheriff Goodwin enters the bustling station.
Excuse me, folks, coming through. Pardon.
Sheriff? You know the girl with the scar you asked about?
Yeah, you found something?
Yeah. And the text message came from her phone.
Goodwin stares down at an open folder. In the forest, Gunner and Joe emerge at the bottom of a towering rock face.
Where exactly did you see the waterman?
In the woods.
Yeah, but where exactly?
I'm tired.
Joe pushes past Gunner. He eyeballs her, then lifts his gaze. His lips part. Gunner takes a few steps forward along the rock face. He raises his hand to another dangling piece of obsidian.
You come in one sec.
A light-skinned man with a salt and pepper beard opens a trailer door.
George Riley? Sheriff Goodwin?
Yeah, what's this about?
Want to ask a few questions about your daughter, Josephine?
What's she do now?
Goodwin holds up one of the missing posters.
Have you ever seen your daughter hanging out with this boy?
I never seen that boy in my life. It's not the kind of friend Joe would have anyway.
He went missing 2 days ago. The boy's mother got a text from Joe's phone, and we have a witness that saw him and a girl with a scar on her neck together before he disappeared.
Well, like I said, I never seen that kid, so...
Goodwin peers into George's trailer.
Josephine here? Love to talk to her.
Well, she's out and about.
Where does she usually go?
I don't know, around town. Usual spots kids go.
When's the last time you saw her?
Yesterday, maybe. It's summer vacation, you know.
I pulled some records from the county hospital. Josephine got 15 stitches on a cut on her neck last month. How'd you get that cut?
You know what? I have no idea how that happened. Joe's just that type of kid. She's always getting herself into trouble, you know?
In the woods, Joe sits by a tree.
Maybe we should go back to where you saw him.
I don't want to talk about this right now, okay?
I know, but... It'll just...
I said I don't want to talk about it.
Gunnar opens his mouth as if to speak, then looks away. Joe gazes over her shoulder.
I want to head back.
You promised me one more day.
Forget about the Waterman. Just a bunch of crap.
No, it's not. You saw him, right? And that's exactly how you got the scar. Right? Joe, right?
I didn't get the scar from the Waterman.
But that's what you said!
I lied. Okay, I lied.
No, you didn't.
No. You have no idea what I've been through.
You won't get the rest of the money, okay? Our deal was that you had to take me to find the Waterman.
I don't care about your stupid money.
My mom is sick! Joe! My mom is really sick! Everyone thinks she'll never get better. The doctors, the nurses, even my own dad. It's everyone except me. I really need to find the Waterman, Joe.
Everyone you love will one day leave you. They'll die or just pack their bags and leave. Your mom is still alive. You should go home, Gunnar.
I don't need you. Okay, I don't need you. I'm going to find the Waterman, with or without you.
Fine. I'm going back by myself.
Joe heads back the way they came, heading up a slope along the bottom of a rock face. Gunnar continues ahead, hurrying down the slope. He moves out of Joe's line of sight. Joe stops. She looks down the slope.
Gunnar!
Meanwhile, Amos sprints through the forest. He leaps and slides effortlessly along the thick undergrowth and loamy earth. Amos pauses by a shallow stream.
Gunnar!
Amos opens his copy of Bussy's map. He pulls up a compass app on his phone. Gunnar moves through a smoky section of woods. He stands at the top of a slope. Gunnar sits and slides down the slope on his butt into a thicker bank of smoke. Gunnar stands. He continues ahead toward a clearing.
One, two, three, four. Close your windows, lock your door. 'Cause you never know for sure.
At home, Mary stares out toward the growing column of smoke in the distance. Joe shuffles through the smoky section of forest, hugging herself tightly.
Gunner! Gunner!
9, 10, 11, 2. Not a thing that you can do when the waterman comes through. And his eyes are set on you.
Gunner stands by a large body of water and looks at his map. He glances over his left shoulder and freezes. A ramshackle, windowless wooden shack stands some distance away, partially obscured amid drifting banks of thick smoke. More white flakes drift down as Gunner moves toward the shack. Gunner stares ahead, blinking at the wooden shack. Gunner removes the katana from his back. He unsheathes the blade. Gunner holds it upright as he approaches the shack. Gunner stands outside the door, which stands ajar. Chunks of obsidian dangle over it. Gunner pushes open the door.
Hello?
Several fat, segmented bugs scatter. The door swings shut behind him. Gunner looks around the dim interior of the shack. Bright shafts of light shine through the cracks between its wooden planks, illuminating floating motes of dust. Gunner eyes a skull resting among tree branches nearby. One of the fat bugs crawls on Gunner's foot. He kicks. Gunner's gaze drifts over an ancient wood stove in a corner and a wooden chair facing it. Gunner slides under a tattered bed, leaving the sheath on the ground. He grabs it just as the door swings open. A figure clad in a heavy fur cloak trudges inside. The figure keeps its back to Gunner as it sits in the chair and opens the door to the stove. Light glows in the stove. The figure leans back. Water drips from their wet fur cloak.
I seen you walk in.
Gunner tentatively emerges from beneath the bed. He grips the katana as he moves around to the side of the figure. The figure keeps his head bowed, revealing a heavy brow, an aquiline nose, and a bushy mustache.
My name's Gunner Boone.
I know who you are. It's a dangerous thing you've done, coming out here.
I'm here to find the waterman. My mom's sick. Everyone has given up on her. And if the waterman could cheat death...
The power you seek comes at a price. A heavy price.
I'll do anything you ask.
I search for her night and day, in that lake and in the forest. But this cursed place seems to revel in my plight. I died in that flood. But this stone brought me back.
The waterman holds up the glowing yellow stone.
Upon its touch, the dead will surely rise. But they'll outlive all they know and love. The hope of finding Sarah is all I have until this wretched body erodes to nothing.
The waterman plods toward Gunnar.
Why would I give to you all the hope I have, Gunnar Boone?
Gunnar backs into a wall.
Gunnar!
The waterman shifts his sunken eyes.
Help! Gunnar!
The waterman moves to the door.
Sarah?
I saw Sarah, that's Joe.
I see. You abandoned your friend.
No. No.
Yes, you did.
No.
You did. For this. The stone.
The waterman holds up the yellow stone. Scenes flash. Mary smiles.
It gave you hope. Made you believe.
Of course he's real.
Gunnar touches a cluster of hanging stones in Bussey's office.
I hung black stones all around the forest to mark where I had searched.
In the forest, Gunnar yanks down a hanging stone.
Hope is a powerful force.
He grins up at the falling white flakes.
It made you see what you wanted to see.
Gunnar sketches the waterman. He stands outside, staring at the wooden shack. The shack transforms into a black and white sketch. Inside the shack, the waterman holds up the dangling yellow stone.
It made you see me.
Gunnar lifts his gaze from the stone to the waterman. The glowing stone morphs into a sketchy animation. The animation spreads along the waterman's arm and body. Gunnar stands outside by the body of water, holding the katana upright.
You should go home.
In the woods, Jo braces herself against a mossy rock as fire blazes nearby. She drops to her knees.
Help me! Gunnar!
Go!
Gunnar and Jo embrace.
My dad gave me the scar. I'm so sorry.
They separate and whip their heads around. Fire consumes a huge patch of nearby brush.
What do we do?
Gunnar!
Dad? Dad!
Gunnar!
Amos comes bounding toward them.
Dad!
Amos lifts Gunnar into a bear hug. Amos lowers a bandana from his nose and mouth. Amos, Gunnar, and Joe stare at the inferno consuming the forest.
Can you swim?
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's go.
No, Dad, I can't go in the water. Dad, I can't go in the water.
Gunnar, I'm gonna get you across. Okay? I promise. I'm gonna get you across.
Gunnar gives a tearful nod.
Let's go!
Joe, Gunnar, and Amos dash through a stand of reeds toward the body of water.
Okay.
Amos carries Gunnar piggyback. They step into the water. From below, orange light glows over rippling water. Joe swims beside Amos, who carries Gunnar. They move away from the orange glow on the right toward a stretch of bluish-green water on the left. At night, Mary sits on the front steps of the house, wrapped in a blanket. Amos pulls up in his pickup with Gunnar in the passenger seat. Mary blinks her shining eyes. She stands.
You're safe.
Gunnar runs toward her. They embrace.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I thought I could save you. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay, baby. It's not your fault. It's okay.
Mary holds out her hand. Amos steps into the hug, wrapping his arms around both Mary and Gunnar. He strokes Gunnar's hair and kisses Mary's forehead. Warm lights glow in the house behind them as the three embrace. In the daytime, Sheriff Goodwin steps out of George's trailer. Joe follows, carrying a duffel bag. A black-haired woman with high cheekbones escorts her. Amos sits parked in his pickup nearby, with Gunnar in the passenger seat. Joe catches sight of Gunnar. She smiles. Gunnar grins back at her. Joe gets into Goodwin's vehicle with her duffel bag. As Amos drives, he and Gunnar beam. At home, Gunnar lies on his bed, holding the dangling piece of obsidian over his face. Amos steps in.
Hey, what's that?
Oh, just something I found in the woods.
I got you something to say sorry for ruining your book.
Amos sets down a glossy wooden carrying case. Gunnar raises his eyebrows. He opens the case. Pencils, charcoal, and other art supplies fill the compartments inside.
What do you think?
Thanks, Dad, but, I'm done with it.
What? Why?
Amos sits on the bed beside Gunnar.
I just can't figure out the ending.
It might take some time, but you'll figure it out. Detective Knox and the missing body is a great story.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I did. I love it. It's amazing. A story about a detective trying to investigate what ended his own life. You should stick with it.
Hey, Dad. If you had to choose between a short life with a lot of love in it and a very long life with no one left to love, which one would you choose?
I would take a short life with your mom in it than a long one without her.
Gunnar leans his head on Amos's shoulder. Amos's eyes fill with tears. He wraps an arm around his son. Gunnar, Joe, and Mary sit at the dining table.
Here come the burgers!
Woo! Nice.
Oh, good.
Amos serves Gunnar a blackened burger.
These look crispy.
Can I have extra cheese on mine?
I think we're all gonna need extra cheese. Should have listened to Mom and kept the heat lower.
I think we should go vegan after this.
Mary holds her left hand out to Amos. He takes it in his own. Amos reaches out his left hand. Gunnar grips it. Joe takes Gunnar's and Mary's hands. Mary closes her eyes.
Dear God, thank you for this very well done crispy meal.
She opens her eyes and gazes at her husband and son.
And for this family.
Amos and Gunnar keep their eyes closed. Gunnar runs his thumb over his dad's fingers.
And for bringing Joe into our lives.
Joe meets Mary's gaze. They share a smile.
And for the blessing of loving each other every day that we have. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Gunnar opens his eyes and gazes ahead toward Mary. A wide, warm smile spreads across his face. Beside the credits, graphic novel illustrations appear and fill with color and shading. In the illustrations, Detective Knox sits on a headstone, looking into an open grave. He has medium brown skin and cropped black hair. Knox, who did this to me? In the next panel, a pale hand rests on his shoulder. Hey, hi, my name is Joe. Joe and Knox shake hands. They soar into the air. Joe, you can fly now. There are some perks to this. I saw who did it. He drove off in a logging truck. Knox, logging truck? That rings a bell. Joe and Knox find a truck parked by a house. Joe, that's the truck. Knox passes through the wall of the house. Knox, wow. Joe, I know, right? They float over a gaping blonde man in bed. Knox, I took him down for torching the forest. Blonde man, what the? Knox and Joe float overhead, chasing the blonde man toward police headquarters. Inside, he grips the front desk. Blonde man, I did it. Letters on an office window read, Knox and Joe, Ghost Detective Agency. Ghost clients float toward the door. Inside, Joe and Knox sit and lean back, smiling with their feet on their shared desk. On the cover, Knox strides forward, wearing a trench coat over a white button-up shirt, his tie flapping. Text below reads, The Adventures of Detective Knox, Gunnar Boone. It fades to black. More credits roll. Audio description provided by International Digital Center. Written by Liz Gutman. Voiced by Opal Besson. Opening credits. Casting by Aisha Coley. Music by Peter Bart. Music supervisor, Dan Wilcox. Costume designer, Nadine Haters. Edited by Blue Murray. Production designer, Lawrence Bennett. Director of photography, Matthew J. Lloyd, ASC. Executive producers, Oprah Winfrey, Darren M. Demeter, Connor Flanagan, Emma Nidell. Produced by David Oyelowo, PGA. Carla Gardini, PGA. Shivani Rawat, PGA. And Monica Levinson, PGA. Written by Emma Nidell. Directed by David Oyelowo. You give me goosebumps when you walk my way. I never know how you do the things you do to me that make me lose it. Oh, my cutie. Oh, my girl, you look so fine. And I love the way you whine. Spend my money, spend my time. Popcorn, girl of my dreams, my chocolate Milo. Copyright 2020, Waterman IP LLC. All rights reserved. In loving memory of my mother, Victoria Oyelowo.
Red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.